This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, and good morning, SB Nation AM. I am Tony D alongside Ron Culver as we move through the morning on your Tuesday. If you want to hit us up on Twitter throughout the show today, you can do so at Tony D Radio. You can also hit Ron up at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. You ever have a friend that just, you know, something's wrong and you want to tell him that things aren't right, but he keeps admitting or keeps saying that things are going well, and you know things aren't going well? You just need him to see that things aren't going well so you could fix it, because you know that he's going to find out one day that things aren't going very well. He's in a really bad relationship, or maybe his job is actually terrible and for some reason he thinks it's great, or maybe his money situation is terrible and he thinks it's really great. It's time for the golf world to admit they were never fine without Tiger Woods. Because the news coming out today that the PGA Championship had a 69% increase in ratings over last year and all the other previous PGA championships where he wasn't in it is signs to me that golf was delusional over the last few years, believing that the Jordan Spieths of the world were carrying the torch. The belief that, oh, Ricky Fowler, the young kids like him, and look at Rory McIlroy, the young kids like him, and America's really tuning in to watch Brooks Koepka win majors. The only reason they're watching Brooks Koepka win a major is if Tiger Woods is right behind him making birdies on the front end. Golf was never fine without Tiger Woods. Now, you ask golf people, and it's a tricky question, because they don't want to put down the accomplishments of the young talent that have done remarkable things. Jordan Spieth, for example, is 25 years old. He's already got three major championships. He's a PGA championship away from a career Grand Slam. Ricky Fowler has emerged on as kind of a pop culture sensation on tour. Brooks Koepka is lifting weights and looks like the Incredible Hulk. But they pale in comparison to our interest in Tiger Woods. And it's time for golf to admit, yeah, you know what? We weren't okay without him. We just weren't okay. 69% is a remarkable, remarkable number. We're rolling along, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Rolling along on a Tuesday morning, SB Nation AM. Tony D along with Ron Culver. 800-777-2907 if you're waking up to whatever news you're waking up to. So Ron said to me, he said, I want to ask your advice. So I said, all right, ask advice. I don't know if I give good advice. I got some people probably say I do. Some people probably say, oh, no. So, yeah, I don't know if you're taking a chance or not here.
Well, we're going to find out.
All right. So what can I offer from the psychiatrist chair?
Well, it's not really a psychiatrist chair.
I was thinking of Lucy
I'm not laying
Peanuts.
Yeah. Perfect.
I was thinking like for a nickel.
I'll be sending a nickel to you in the mail.
Okay.
So basically, this is the scenario that I'm in right now. My oldest tried out for two select teams.
Oh, okay.
Right, he's been wanted by a couple of teams. We've narrowed it down to two teams. First scenario is it's an established team. They definitely will be a winning team, but I don't know how much playing time he would get because it's already an established team. He's coming in. They have like two spots to fill, and you know, but it's a good team, and there's a chance that he could get competitive enough to make a challenge to become one of the main feature players on that team. But it's going to take time. Scenario B is his coach from last year over the summer has decided to create a select team. It's brand spanking new, and they're in a way almost building a team around him. I'm not saying that they're that he's Mike Trout and you got to build a team around him, but he is definitely a team leader. The coach relies on him to be a team leader, and my son really likes the coach. So that's my dilemma right now, is do I go with Team A where he may not play as much? And as I'm saying this, I'm kind of answering my own question, but I just want to hear other thoughts.
All right, so what? Like, how old is he?
He is 11.
Okay.
And that's the other thing, too. Team A is a under 11 team, so he would definitely be one of the older players on the team. Team B is under 12, so he's kind of right in the middle.
All right. I believe, now, again, so what are his goals for this? What are your goals for this?
My goal is we just want him to keep developing as a player, just to keep the love for the game and keep developing as a player. So, you know, honestly, I'm looking at scholarship, man.
All right. Well, okay.
I know he's only 11. Right. The boy needs to get a scholarship.
Yeah. At 11, I saw that I have a 16-year-old, so I went through the 11. He wasn't one in 18. But my goal at 11 was to put him in a position where he's not going to lose interest in the sport. That should be your primary goal, not development. Development will continue as he gets better. Where kids drop off, you're in the range where kids don't ever quit, but the possibility of quitting is there as they get older and they have other interests and they start seeing the work and they change their minds or whatnot. They'll say all the right things at 11. I'm sure he'll tell you, I'll never quit playing baseball. You don't know that at 15. You don't know that at 16. So put him in a position where he's going to have a lot of fun, where he's going to continue to play at a high level but have a lot of fun. Because if you put him in a position where he's not playing much and he still has to put in all the work at practice, 11 is still young enough to not really get that concept of figuring that out. I would put him in a position where he's going to love going every day. He feels like he's massively important. He feels like he's having a good time. That would be the direction I go in.
Yeah, and that's the way I'm kind of leaning to. I mean, he really likes the coach. The coach was awesome over the summertime, really taught him a lot. And they joke around, and the funny thing was, is that he went to the tryout. He's been to two with Team A, two with Team B. He is massively looser with Team B.
That's where I would put him.
With the coach that he knows. He knows a lot of the players on the team. He knows players on the other team, his best friends on the other team. But he is just, you can just tell that there's this, swagger that he has with Team B.
I'd put him on Team B.
Okay.
I would put him on Team B.
I mean, that's the way I've been leaning. And, we're leaving it up to him, too. We keep asking his opinion, saying, which team would you rather play for? We want to make this as much as your decision. We're going to, as parents, we got to guide him in the right direction. But we want him to have as much input because in the end, yeah, it's ultimately his decision. He's the one who's going to be out there playing day in and day out with this team. And we want him to have as much fun and be comfortable. And he seems to have, there's just this comfort level there. I mean, they're probably not going to win a lot of tournaments. And that I'm just afraid that if he's always on a losing team, that's just gonna struggle with that.
Is this team going? I mean, when you talk about the team,
it's brand spanking new.
It could be put together well that they win.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. It definitely can. I mean, there's definitely decent players on that team. It's just the other team is already established, and my fear is that he gets on that other team, he's not going to be. Not really necessarily a focal point of the team. He's not going to get as much playing time.
Yeah.
I feel that he's going to ride the bench a little bit more because the other team already has established players and already have their positions picked out. And he's going to be fighting. And as an 11-year-old, I'm like, I don't know if you want to, if you really have the mindset to say, I got to compete with, Joe over there and take his position away. And when you get in high school, obviously you got to say, no, you got to step it up and take Joe's position away. And you're more determined and you have, you know what it takes.
Yeah. I still think that there is at 11 years old, and this is just the way I've seen it with my two kids. They're still, my number one goal is to, at that age or a little bit, even a little bit older, is to get, not get them into the high pressure stakes of what we adults are doing to them. In there's plenty of time for that. I am blown away. Let me just put it to you this way. I'm trying to say this right. I am blown away as my son went from an 11-year-old to now a 17-year-old. How many of his friends that when we were playing in Little League, or my daughter was in soccer, or my son was playing football. At 17, how many of those kids aren't doing it anymore? When I said to myself, that might be the greatest Little League baseball player I've ever seen in my life. And then I find out later he's not playing anymore. And I don't know what happened, right? I don't know the circumstances. But I can almost guarantee you that at some point he was put on a team or put in a situation where baseball was really not fun. And he was too young to understand that there's a secondary part of this. And he wasn't ready for the secondary part of it. So develop, have a blast. There's plenty of time to be in that more cutthroat competitive side when he gets up to gets up in age into the high school level.
Yeah, that's the way I've been leading. Just wanted to get an outside opinion. My wife and I, we talk about it often. Like, which team would be most beneficial to him? Because we don't want him to lose the love game. He does have some raw talent. And the fact that so many teams have been requesting him, and he's only been playing for 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, and it's also, too, there's the other thing, too, that a lot of kids miss is when your kid is good at something, really good at something, and it's great when you put them around, you know, because iron sharpens iron, that kind of thing, when you get put around better players. But there is a point of self-realization that some kids go through where they go, wow, I may not be the best hitter on this team anymore. Or I may not be the best pitcher on this team anymore, or I may not be. And that's a great lesson to have, because we want them to be, you know, we want them to sharpen and sharpen and sharpen. But it's sometimes at a young age, they start to have self-doubt, and that creeps in. And you got to, you know, when they get a little older, they handle that a little better. My number one goal with an 11-year-old would be combo development and fun. Because losing the love of the game is a big worry. It's a really big worry. You know, my daughter is going through this with soccer. She's been playing soccer since she was 5. She's now going to be 13. And I think the other day she was just like, man, I want to lean towards basketball. And I was like, well, do you still want to play soccer? She goes, yeah, but I mean, it wasn't the same. And it was 3 years ago. I mean, 3 years ago I was all about soccer. It was the only thing I cared about. Couldn't get her off the field. Now it's like, I want to do something else. And I wonder, did I blow it by putting her on teams that were more advanced than she was, or she wasn't having a good time, or she didn't like a certain coach. And it just chipped away at her mentality. It was just enough. It was just chiseled. I just chiseled that away enough. And I don't know. She says no, but who knows? I mean, they're not going to give me a real answer. So that's where I would go.
All right, you gave good advice, Tony. So don't sell yourself short, because I mean you gave the advice that I was seeking. I just wanted, it was almost like, you know, you go to a doctor to get a second opinion. Like, do I really need this knee surgery? And you go to the second doctor and you go like, yeah, if you want to walk.
I've been fascinated with you since I became a parent of two, you know, kids who played youth sports. I've been fascinated by it because. I get a little queasy, like when I was with my son's baseball games. I would get a little, it would feel weird when I would hear a parent take their, you know, like my son would have practice and a dad would come up and he'd go, hey, Josh, come on now, we got to go. And then he'd look for no reason. Nobody asked him. Nobody asked him why. Nobody cared. And he would just look at the other parents and go, got him scheduled for batting training. like just threw it out there just to make sure we all knew that he hired a personal tutor for batting. Like, nobody asked him and nobody cared. And it always made me nervous. And then I would say to myself, I'm not going to be that dad. And then I started becoming somewhat like that dad. My son still teases me about how, like, you know, he went through a batting slump, how he could just see corner of my eye, just me like pacing up and down because he wasn't hitting the ball well. And I was like, I don't know why I did that. I don't know why I did that. As when I sort of thought that I wouldn't be that dad, I ended up becoming that dad, you know, that kind of thing. So
yeah,
I found
catch myself
youth sports,
with that too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why that is. I don't know why we do that. I mean, again, like my kid, like a little league game is not going to, like, there isn't going to be a moment where somebody's going to come to me and go, hey, I saw your 8-year-old. Let me tell you what, Arkansas has got a good baseball program. He could come on. Right. Like, no one's going to do that at a little league game. No one's going to remember if he struck out three times.
Are you sure about that? Because that's what I'm planning on. I'm planning on a scout to come out tomorrow, see him in practice, and go, oh, here you go, four years paid for.
Well, I tell you right now, if you can get a baseball scholarships are hard to get. There's not a lot of them. It's a pretty thing. If you can get one, God bless you. Hey,
I've seen it happen in soccer. You know, you see those news reports every once in a while that a 9-year-old kid is being touted by Real Madrid or Manchester United.
Like, exactly. How good do you have to be at 10 to get like that kind of, like, I think about Bobby Knight with Damon Bailey back in the early 90s. Damon Bailey was an eighth grader in Indiana, and Bobby Knight, like, publicly announced he wanted him to play for Indiana. And I thought, how good do you have to be in eighth grade for Bobby Knight to say you could play for the Indiana Hoosiers? I mean, that's got to be amazing.
Well, LeBron James, I know he had to be getting offers probably when he was like a freshman or sophomore, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, by the time he was a junior, we all knew his name. It's like, oh, we're just
exactly
counting
right.
the days now.
Yeah.
Who's going to get him?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Then you have the opposite where Michael Jordan gets cut as a sophomore.
Yeah, right. I can't. Well, I'm looking forward to see what your decision is and how he plays out this season.
Yeah, I think that's the way we're leaning. Yeah. I mean, it's a year-long commitment, so it's not terribly. I mean, if it's terrible, you know, if it's a terrible experience, it's only a year.
That's awesome that you have choices. That's great. That's awesome that he's good enough to have those kind of options. It's fantastic, man. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, after the first tryout, his coach called and said, hey, you know, they haven't really done that. Besides their own kids, they haven't really given phone calls out to people saying, hey, we're, you know, we want your son on the team, but we got it right away. And we kind of knew. We knew that, yeah. You know, he was afraid because he knew he went to another tryout and was like, oh, but, you know, I want to make an offer to him before. It's just, I mean, it's a weird position because we've done rec. We've, you know, he's made all-star teams. We've been on a select team where, you know, they kind of just put it together, but we're still new to this. You know, I grew up playing soccer, and my wife grew up playing soccer and volleyball. We kind of knew that aspect of it. And so baseball, we never thought we'd be baseball parents. Now that's a different brood of parents.
Yeah, I knew some friends of mine that were baseball parents. It's fun.
Yeah, and you see a lot of dads trying to live vicariously
Absolutely.
Through their kid. Yeah. And I try really hard not to. But, you know, at the same time,
it's not easy, man. It's not
easy.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, I mean, he's a much better player than I was at his age. And I tell him that all the time. It's like, you are leagues ahead of where I was at that age. I think I was a decent player, but I wasn't at that level.
Yeah,
where I have teams actually seeking me out.
Yeah, that's great. Well, good. I'm looking forward to hearing where this goes. All right, 800-777-2907. If you want to jump into the program, we've got a lot to get to. We'll talk some college football today. I've also got Carmelo Anthony going to the Rockets, so we got to get to that. 800-777-2907. It's SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on SB Nation AM. All right, so Ron, are you ready for the Carmelo Anthony era to begin in Houston? It was official Monday.
I'm not he gave his
verbal commitment, and then he signed the deal to become a Rocket 1 year. I like how there's like Mike D'Antoni is spinning this now, right? Like, oh, no, it's different here. It'll be easier.
It is different.
It is different, but
he's older. Both of them are older, wiser, hopefully.
Hopefully. Oh, is there a guarantee that he's older and wiser?
No, but it's funny that you bring that up, because one of the things that I've been hearing a lot, or I've been seeing a lot, going over Twitter, because obviously, you know, I'm in Houston, so I see a lot of Houston-based tweets. And everyone is under the impression that, oh, Carmelo is a changed man. He is a changed man. He's not going to be this high-strung guy he was with the Knicks.
And that sounds like wishful thinking to me.
It totally sounds like wishful thinking.
Yeah, that sounds like it's my thing. He's on my team. He'll be different.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's a chance he can come in and go, you know what, Harden, this is your team. Paul, This is your team. It's your guys' team before me.
Yeah.
And I don't see that happening. I see maybe, you know, I see like the honeymoon period, it being okay. But then I see as it progresses, him not getting the touches that he needs, he's going to, you know, start complaining, start whining, and turn into regular Melo.
That's what I'm worried about, right? I think I was saying this earlier. Like, it's the March Melo that I'm worried about, right? Like, the one that's like, we're already been into this, and it's not my role, and I'm coming off the bench, and I
don't
know.
Did you say March Melo or
Marshmallow? March Melo, right. The March Melo. I remember about 10 years ago. It was about 10 years ago when Shaquille O'Neal went to play for Cleveland. Remember when he had a little brief moment with the Cavaliers? And he said, this is LeBron's team. Just won't make it. Like, nobody in the audience believed it was Shaq's team, right? Like, no one thought, oh, well, this is the same thing I worry about with Melo. Like, he'll have, like, a thing and he'll go, well, this is James Harden's team. It's Chris Paul's team. Like, no one believes that. Like, no one believes you have to remind us that whose team it is. It's not us that need to be told. It's you who have to be told whose team it is. You have to convince us you believe it. When you say that, say it with conviction that you know it. Not that you're just telling us. Say it that you know it. Because that's the important thing. Is that if the moment... Look, Carmelo was the centerpiece of the Nuggets. And he was the centerpiece of the Knicks. When he went to Oklahoma City, and I'm 100% believing that he was sold a big three kind of combo thing, right? A big three, all three of us are in on it. All three of us are going to be on this team doing these things. And then it became a big two with Paul George and Russell Westbrook. And they didn't really utilize Carmelo the way he wanted. The best hope I have for the Rockets is the idea that at no time has this ever been sold to anybody, including Carmelo, as a big three thing. It might be that he starts with those guys, but it's never been sold in the press as now the Rockets have their big three. And if Carmelo gets that, if he understands that, then I think it works. If it's sold as, if Carmelo has been sold as, no, it's going to be Harden, Paul, and you, then watch out, because the you part of that equation for Carmelo Anthony is a lot bigger in his mind than it ever is in D'Antoni or any other coach's mind. It certainly was bigger than what Billy Donovan wanted to use him for when he wasn't scoring as much as he used to and all that, and he wasn't playing as much as he used to. That became a problem. I mean, if you're the Rockets, this could work. This could work. I mean, he can score, but it better work from the mindset of he absolutely gets it. Now, here's the other thing. If I'm James Harden and I'm Chris Paul, I have an obligation to that too. They may be good friends with Carmelo Anthony, but they also have to sort of kind of keep that in check. And if they do that, this could actually be decent.
There's Melo a lot hater. Of potential. There's a lot of upside here, but to me, it almost feels like Carmelo needs to come in and say, you know what, I'm the fourth man on this team.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where he's pushing Clint Capella above himself. And it's one of those situations we just haven't ever seen that out of Carmelo. We have never seen him take a role where he's like, no, I'm going to be less than what I'm used to.
Yeah, and to his credit, I mean, like I said earlier, to his credit, no one has asked him to do that, right? I mean, the Oklahoma City Thunder sold it as this is three parts
of
one.
This is our big three competing with the Warriors.
Yeah, exactly. This is how we're answering the Warriors. We have now our big three, so we have our three parts working as one. When reality, it became two parts working as one with one little extra bonus every now and then when he was on. And that's the exact scenario that the Rockets need to be selling and at least be convincing his camp that that's how it's going to work. Because I am not a Carmelo is a guaranteed cancer person. I know there's people who have that. Like, I don't think that's the case. I think that if he does change his mindset, he'll be good to work with. He'll be fine. But he has to understand that. And the problem with Carmelo is you don't see whether he gets it or not until sometimes it's too late. You don't see whether or not he understands it until you're late in the season and you realize this is not working. There's something here that's missing. He doesn't seem to be the kind of person we're looking for. And that's what I'm wondering down the road when we get further into the season. But it's going to start because yesterday he officially signed. 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. Tony D, Ron Culver alongside as we roll along on SB Nation AM.
back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us here on SB Nation AM. Ron, do you follow wrestling at all? Are you a wrestling fan? Even
I
minorly.
Used to be.
Used to be?
Nah,
me too.
But
I haven't done it lately. I'm not. I haven't been into it lately. I remember watching when I was younger, probably my early 20s. I started dying out, maybe my mid 20s, and you know, I follow it on the periphery. Let me just say that.
Yeah, I was in college. I was a religious watcher.
Yeah,
I was there every Monday night for Raw, but I, you know, never did I ever pay for the pay per view. You know,
I find this phenomenon that occurs in the wrestling world. When a wrestler dies, and we just had Jim Neidhart die, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, passed away at the age of 63. So what happens is that I go, oh, man, that's sad. And I go, wow, let me read up on it because I remember him from my younger days when I watched wrestling. And inevitably, as they go through his history in the sport, there's a paragraph where they talk about his famous matches with certain other wrestlers that I know, and the article then mentions that they too are dead. And I go, wow, I didn't know that. I must have missed the news. I did not know that that person died, or Davey Boy Smith died, or all, you know, these wrestlers. And I start thinking to myself, I don't know if it's me, but does anybody in the wrestling community, do they know why it feels like all these wrestlers are dying in their 40s, 50s, and 60s? I know we have some that live on until their 70s, and I think Nikolai Volkov just passed away, and he was in his 70s. But it feels like 63 is awfully young to be dying, and I know he had some substance abuse problems after wrestling. But is there something that's going on that I don't know? Is there some sort of thing that's contract? Like, I'm looking at the people of my youth, and they're all dying, or they're all dead. And I'm thinking, that shouldn't be. They should be old men reliving the glory days of their sport. I mean, 63 is young.
Well, maybe it's just steroid use.
It might be.
You know, all those guys were juicing.
But I don't see anybody saying, hey, there's a problem here in this sport. Is that we're... But again, I don't watch it. I don't watch it enough. And maybe it has been addressed. But it seems to me, you know, he fell. This is what the report is, that Jim Neidhart fell, injured his head, and succumbed to the injuries. Okay, that seems reasonable at 63. That happens to anybody. But it's just a long list. Like, I didn't know Junkyard Dog was dead. I mean, I was like, my God, man.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I remember him.
Yeah.
Yep, I didn't know he was dead.
I didn't know.
Didn't know he was alive either, so I don't know what that really means.
Like, there was a game on, there was a game on some show, Wrestler Dead or Alive, and they just named wrestlers, and people would guess. That was a legitimate game because you weren't 100% sure if a wrestler was alive or dead.
We should play that.
I know.
Run down a list. I'll tell you if he's dead or alive. I know Hulk Hogan is still alive.
Hulk Hogan is still alive. I interviewed Hulk Hogan once. The most surprise interview I've ever done in the history of my career. And this is how it took place. I was working in Colorado Springs, which is not a huge market, but it's still a good, it's right outside Denver. So it's about an hour outside Denver. And I was doing an afternoon show in Colorado Springs, mid-2000s. And at that time, Hulk Hogan had a daughter, Brooke, and I don't know if she still sings, but she was singing. And so she was coming to Colorado Springs. She was going to be an opening act for another group. They were going to play at World Arena in Colorado Springs. So we had a cluster of about 6 or 7 stations. And she came in to do an interview with like our hot AC station. And Hulk came with her. And that was part of the package, right? You get to interview Hulk Hogan if you can talk to Brooke about her concert, kind of get people to be up, you know, excited about the concert and seeing her. So Hulk would do some interviews with you. I didn't know Hulk Hogan was coming into the building because I was the lone sports station that got left out on all of these conversations, like at major clusters around the country. So nobody told me Hulk Hogan was coming in. So I was doing my afternoon show, and Hulk did the interview. I had a good time. They took some pictures. Some other people in the station came by, and they all took pictures. Again, I'm in there yapping away about whatever, and I had no idea he was even in the building. He passes my studio. He sees a light on, and he asks somebody, who's in there? And they said, oh, that's Tony. He does our afternoon sports show. He goes, can I go in and talk to him? And they go, yes. Not, you know, and he just walked in. And I, again, not knowing he was in town or even in the building or anything like that, imagine my surprise when I'm yapping about some stupid Bronco position or whatever the heck was going on that day. Hulk Hogan walked into the studio and sat down and wanted to talk.
Brother.
Brother. So I,
how many brothers
I mean,
did you get?
Oh, I got a lot. It was really fun. They got a little, it was really fun. He was absolutely great. And the reason, and I told him, I said, one of the stories I had was when I was dating my wife, we were living in Florida at the time, and I was working at a restaurant, and he used to come in to the rest, that restaurant. And he always had this one waitress that would always wait on him. Nobody else waited on him. But I always thought it was interesting, and I finally asked, I got to ask him about it, is that it's very hard to go, you know, incognito when you're Hulk Hogan. You're big, you're blonde. I mean, you're not, you're going to get recognized. But he would come in his his NWO stuff. Like, he came in looking like the part on TV. Like, he didn't come in wearing normal clothes or anything like that. He would come in looking like he just came off a taping. And so I asked him, and he said, man, he goes, I did that 24-7, man. He goes, 24-7. I just lived that part 24-7. I was like, man, it was great. We'd see you come in, and me and the other guys would all want to come over there, but nobody. I said, Linda was the only one, and he's like, oh, yeah, Linda. So we shared a moment there. It was great. But we talked about Andre. We talked about WrestleMania 3, of course. We talked about the ups and downs of the business. We talked about Vince. I mean, we had a great conversation. I loved it.
Did you throw a little Thunder Lips in there?
I did. I actually asked him about what was it like to work with, you know, Sly Stallone. I mean, I didn't get specific about the movie, but Rocky 3. I said, that's when I first saw you. I told him, I said, I first saw you in Rocky 3. And I said, that's when I noticed. And then all of a sudden, next thing I know, you're appearing on the wrestling. But I remember you in Rocky 3. That was the first time I noticed him. And how big he was. He said he just towered over Sly Stallone because Stallone's short. He's like 5'3", 5'4". He just towered over him.
Yeah, where I lived in L.A., he had a house up there. And every once in a while, you would see him riding his bike. He had a gigantic car. He was unmistakable and just a massive human being. You just knew that was him and just see him cruising up and down the, you know, this one main street, and you would just be on his Harley. Big, it was a bright blue one, too. That's what I remember most. Then, you know, huge handlebars, like one of those, you know, true biker's bike. And then just cruising.
Yeah, and he did one really cool thing, and I will always be appreciative of this, is that we had a listener who was really special kid, really, really special kid. He used to listen to the show every day, and he called in, and he heard Hulk Hogan was in the studio, and he got his mom. He couldn't drive, and he got his mom to race down. And he called our producer, and he just wanted to know if he could get something autographed. But his mom was coming from work, and he said, "I'll get my mom to drive me down." And we said, "I don't know if he'll wait." And Hogan waited till he showed up. And I was always appreciative of that. And I even told him, I said, this is a special kid. I said, this kid's wonderful. I said, I really hope you. And he didn't mind. He didn't mind waiting. He hung out in the studio, and then he showed up in the lobby, and Hulk went out to the lobby and signed the autograph and took pictures and made that kid's day. And he didn't have to stay. I mean, his daughter was on a schedule. He didn't have to stick around. But they said, give me just 5-10 minutes, and I'll be there. And Hulk stuck around and waited. And I always appreciate that. That was really, really cool. So he was a good dude. So. But I started the segment by talking about Bret the Anvil Neidhart, and I was just curious if I was the only one that noticed that we seem to have lost a lot of wrestlers early in their lives. And again, it probably is steroids and the way they work out, and maybe sometimes it's substance abuse, and maybe sometimes it's natural causes, and maybe sometimes it's an accident, like in his case. But I don't know. I read the article, Ron, and I was sad because a lot of people that were in the article that I remember are no longer around, and I'm doing the math. I mean, it wasn't like it was 50 years ago that I remember watching these guys, and they were in their 20s and maybe early 30s, and now they're gone. And I'm thinking to myself, that seems really young for a lot of these guys to be disappearing.
So who would be on the wrestling death watch? Because my pick, honestly, would be Mick Foley because of what he threw his body into.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but I don't think he did a whole lot of steroids. He just didn't have that body.
Ric Flair in the clear from his near-death experience that he had about a year ago?
That guy's going to be around for a while. Yeah, he's like a cockroach.
Yeah, he's
up
probably
there with Keith Richards.
Yeah, he had a thing where he was like near death and he survived it and now he's fine. And now I'm like, that you're right. He might be like Keith Richards. He'd be like, you ain't going to kill him. He ain't going down.
He's going to woo for many, many more years.
There is a Wikipedia page, I kid you not, that says list of premature professional wrestling deaths. And it is big and long.
That's what she said.
Yeah. I mean, they got it in categories, right? They got it in categories of under 40, under 30, under 50. And it is gigantic. They broke it down by age. Now, some of these are murder, car accident, you know, whatnot.
One dude who fell from the ceiling.
Yeah.
Like I remember that.
Cancer. Oh, yeah, yeah. That was Owen Hart.
Yeah.
In 2099, he fell from the rafters. And they kept the Ultimate Warrior is dead. I didn't know that.
No, I knew he was dead.
Now, when did he die?
2 years ago.
Really?
I think so, yeah.
Golly. I had no idea. Rowdy Piper is dead? I didn't know that either.
I think he died last year.
How do you know this and I don't? You didn't follow it.
I work in the industry, Tony. All right.
Is there
do you?
Yeah. I don't even notice this. I don't remember.
No, the only reason why I know this is one of the hosts that I've worked for in the past was a huge wrestling guy, and he would bring up, I can't remember, who was it, Dusty Rhodes?
Dusty Rhodes, yeah.
Who died, and
I remember that.
He died right before the host went on air, and it was a 2-hour show, and he almost spent 2 hours talking about Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I remember hearing about him. I don't really know too much about him, but it really struck him hard, and so that's what he wanted to talk about for 2 hours.
Yeah. All right. Rowdy Piper died in 2015. So yeah,
that wasn't that long ago.
Right. Now, I knew Randy Savage died. I knew that.
Well, because I knew you don't see Slim Jim commercials anymore.
Yeah, that's right. And I knew Elizabeth had died.
Did she? I didn't know that. Elizabeth I thought she died. Was still around.
No, she was with. I think she was with some other wrestler at the time. I think she was with Lex Luger. I'm not 100% sure. I don't want to go too far into it because I don't really know for sure. I seriously didn't know the Ultimate Warrior died. I seriously had no idea that the Ultimate Warrior died.
So either they die or they move on to different careers that you're kind of surprised. Like I'm not surprised that The Rock is having a career that he has because I mean wrestling is acting.
Yeah, that's right.
But what does surprise me is someone like Kane is a mayor in your great state.
Oh yeah, in Tennessee. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Kane is now a political office.
Yeah, that's got to be some intense. I mean, I just want one time for him to come out and just like, you know, drop his hands, fire start yeah, exactly. going up from the, you know, in the courtroom.
That's right.
Because his whole shtick, too, is that he never talked.
Yeah, he never talked.
He never said a word, and now he's a mayor.
Now he's doing political speeches. I remember when Chris Benoit died. Remember he was in that murder-suicide
thing? Yeah, I do remember that.
It was like in his Atlanta house where his kids died. I mean, it was a really, really bizarre story.
And that one I think they chalked up to CTE.
I think so. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think
there's a lot of that as well. Because obviously, you know, getting your head bashed in with the folding chair probably isn't a great thing.
Yeah, I know. Golly. But yeah, it's amazing. This website's amazing. This page is incredible of all these people who've died and what age they died in and the categories they died in. It's crazy. All right, 800-777-2907 as SB Nation AM rolls along.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Ron, I'll let you take over this segment because you said you got a pyramid question.
Yes. I mean, you know the game show. It used to be $20,000 pyramid back in the day. Now it's $50,000 pyramid.
Okay.
Michael Strahan's the host. There is it was the final round. I don't know who the contestant is, just some random. I'm going to pull a wrestling term since we were talking, some random jabroni.
Got it.
And he is giving the clue to Tim Meadows from Saturday Night Live, you know, ladies man, Tim Meadows.
Right.
And the clue reads, let me get the exact clue for you. The clue is people whose last name is Obama.
Oh, all right, that's easy.
Right?
Right, that's an easy one.
Okay, here's what he said.
Edmund and Tim for $50,000. Here's your first subject. Go.
Bin Laden.
Oh my God. Oh my God. How did that go down?
Well, I don't get to see the rest of the clip. It cuts off right there.
Holy cow. I'm surprised Michael Strahan didn't just stop the game and kick him off the show.
I'm surprised he didn't just tackle him.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, you know, this is hey, you know what? If you want to make up for that sack that you know, supposedly got Brett Favre on, go level this guy.
Yeah. I mean, the first one on the pyramid is usually, like, things that are round or things that are, like, red. Right? I mean, it's just like a warm-up. Like all he had to do was say Barack, and that's all he needed. I don't even know if anybody else.
Well, I mean, you know, if he said Barack.
Who's doing the clue? Or Michelle. He could have said Michelle,
too. Michelle. I mean, because, you know, he might have said president.
Yeah.
I already got that. But yeah, you can say last name.
Yeah.
Or maybe you can't say last name, but you could. Bin Laden.
Bin Laden. Oh, my God. Okay, have the mobs organized outside this guy's house yet?
Probably.
They're coming. Holy cow, that's amazing. That is amazing. Game show legacy. Oh, my gosh. All right, SB Nation AM rolling along. 800-777-2907 if you want to get involved in the show.